So today I'm continuing with the Eightfold Path. So as many of you know, we've been on this theme for probably almost a year now. And it's been quite a journey, and we're at Wise Mindfulness now. And so I'll just name those eight steps of the Eightfold Path just to give you context. So it's wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And there's a little word wise for each word, sometimes translated as right. So it depends a little bit on the translator. It could be right mindfulness as well. And so when the Buddha speaks about wise or right mindfulness, he speaks about the four foundations of mindfulness. And those are laid out in a sutta called the Satipatthana Sutta, a discourse that the Buddha spoke. And those four establishments or foundations of mindfulness are first the body and feeling tone, which is kind of an automatic response of liking, disliking, or neutral. And then mind states, so craving, aversion, delusion, and other mind states. And then the fourth foundation is dhammas. And I spoke about each of these already, and I started dhammas last week. And so if you're curious about any of them, you can look in the website and on their resources, there are the talks on those topics. And so today, a continuation of dhammas. And the word dhamma depends on the context what it means. In this context, it's hard to translate, but some have translated it as phenomena or aspects of the Buddha's teaching. And there are five categories of dhammas in this sutta. And I'm just naming all of this as an overview. You don't have to remember any of this. I'll get into what I'm actually going to talk about in a little bit. And so the five categories, the five lists that are mentioned are the hindrances, the five hindrances, and the five aggregates, the six sense spheres, the seven factors of awakening, and the four noble truths. And so those topics alone could be years of offering talks. But I started with the seven factors of awakening last week, and I want to continue that this week. And last week I gave all reasoning behind that. I won't go into that this week. And last week I talked a little bit about how the seven factors are kind of these expressions of beauty and wholesomeness on the path. And so often we are kind of looking at everything that's not going well, all the dukkha, all the unsatisfactoriness that we're encountering. But the natural progression of our path is that we'll also be cultivating and nourishing, and these will be arising in our practice, these wholesome states of mind and heart. And these are very necessary on our path because they support us. We really need every once in a while to feel good, to have wholesome experiences, because else this path is going to be really difficult. And so last week I looked at mindfulness. We looked at mindfulness and investigation. Those are the first two aspects first two of those seven factors. And together, investigation, together with energy and joy, are the energizing factors. And then we get to the calming factors after that, which are tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And so I'm aiming to get to energy, joy, and hopefully concentration today. tranquility first, tranquility. And so after the awakening factor of investigation that I talked about last week, which I also said that it could be, you could say, maybe perhaps curiosity or interest for this awakening factor. And that can be a little bit of a softer feel, can have a little bit of a softer feel, and can be helpful in our practice, because investigation can sometimes feel really like you're really doing something with your intellect, or while it's more of a softer approach of, oh, being curious and, oh, what's actually happening, but being interested in, oh, what is this actually like? So we can hold it a little lighter, this investigation awakening factor. And so when we are curious about our experience, when we investigate it a little bit, when we're interested, then naturally there will be a little bit of energy arising. This curiosity, this interest really generates energy. And so through, I'm also harking back to the other ones because they are so intertwined. So through this investigation or through this curiosity, we start to recognize, how does suffering come about? How does unsatisfactoriness come about? And how can we move away from that? How can we move towards wholesomeness, towards happiness, towards peace? And then this process of investigation, of discovery of what is leading to what, how are causes and conditions playing out. That whole process gives us energy to keep going, because there's interest, because there is, we want to know, we want to keep going with the practice. And in that whole process, we start to see that, okay, this mindfulness, the first awakening factor, is present, and then investigation can come in, and then we start to see the usefulness of that. And also that will give us some energy. And so energy can also be expressed through our willingness to stay with the experience. So if something difficult arises, then energy can help us to stay with the difficulty, and our willingness to be there for, you know, some aversion or some anger or sadness or pain in the body, perhaps. And sometimes this word for energy, virya, in Pali it's virya, is translated as effort. And in that case, it's really about putting in the effort for practice. And this can be a little bit of a difficult word for some, because we're so, like, a lot of us are wired to over effort, and that's not so helpful. And so if you translate it in this way, then there's a little bit of a danger of over efforting, and that's not so helpful. There's always kind of a balance needed in our effort. And so if we have a healthy balance in our effort, then it might open up the possibility for us to be with, you know, some of those more difficult states of mind, like self-loathing or thoughts of not being good enough, or perhaps a sadness around something, some difficulty that we're going through. And so energy, effort is really helpful in all of this. In a way, we can also perhaps see it as a form of persistence, like a gentle persistence in the face of whatever is arising. Whether it's something that's beautiful and wholesome or something that's difficult. And I really like this image from the suttas, the discourses of the Buddha, where the Buddha describes this hen who's sitting on her eggs. And, you know, if the hen just, you know, keeps sitting on her eggs, they're gonna hatch at some point. So if we just keep sitting, our eggs are not literally gonna hatch, but but eventually we'll reap the fruit and the benefit of this practice. And so I find that a really helpful image, because the hen is also not going to pick on the eggs, right, to see if something's happening in the eggs, because that, you know, that would ruin the whole process. So we also need to just trust that something is happening, you know, earlier on. Someone shared about these like 3D images, and then all of a sudden you see the banana. You know, we need to trust that if we keep on going with the practice, at some point we see that there's actually an image there in the blur of the 3D image. And so then we get to the next awakening factor, which is joy. Also translated as rapture or happiness. And when we are energized by the practice, then there is often a natural joy that might arise as well. And so joy can naturally arise in our practice, and we can also kind of sometimes tune into it. Like Bhikkhu Anālayo calls this the subtle joy of being the present moment, that I also mentioned during the meditations. Like he says, even the most boring chore can become an occasion for experiencing subtle joy, as long as the chore is carried out with awareness well established in the present moment. And so this really points to, if we are in the present moment, there can be this subtle joy if we tune into it. And it might not always be there, but sometimes it's there, and it's really helpful to consciously tune into it, because, like I said before, having some joy in the practice is very helpful and supportive. It keeps us going. If we never have any joy or other wholesome states, it's going to be a really hard journey. And so the Buddha actually, in some teachings, really encourages us to incline our minds towards wholesomeness, like this subtle joy that might arise. But other forms of wholesomeness, like we can do some metta, loving kindness, to generate wholesomeness, or any of the other brahmaviharas. And so this energy in our practice, this sort of curiosity, the energy, and then the natural joy that might arise, that's kind of the progression that sometimes arises in our practice. And so the importance of the joy, there's this teacher Piyadasi Thera, who describes it in a bit more strong terms. He says, one lacking in this quality cannot proceed along the path to enlightenment. There will arise in them sullen indifference to the Dhamma, an aversion to the practice of meditation. It is therefore very necessary that one striving to attain enlightenment should endeavor to cultivate the all-important factor of happiness. That's what he calls it, happiness. Yeah. So it's really important. And because sometimes we think like, oh, suffering is, you know, we need to suffer. But actually, we need to balance. We don't only need to suffer. We will suffer. That will happen. So, but we also need the good stuff. And of course, there is the danger that we become attached to the good stuff. But, you know, we can work with that. We can just be aware of the attachment. We can notice, oh, wait, now I'm attached. Now I'm grasping and craving for that. And so that can become part of our practice, that we're attached. And so that is, then now there's a little bit of unwholesomeness again. And so at times this joy can be super subtle, like this, what Bhikkhu Anālayo calls the subtle joy of being in the present moment, can be really subtle. But there can also be really big, energizing rapture and joy arising in the practice. And so, you know, also nurturing and savoring that, if that happens, it's really a wonderful thing if it happens. So it can be you know, even a very bodily experience of like these waves of joy rushing through the body. Sometimes it can feel like, you know, goosebumps feeling of kind of this energy coursing through the body, or a flash of lightning. And so these are like these deep states of joy that can arise from practicing. And so the arising of joy in the practice can be gradual. It's not something we can force. It's something that we can incline towards, or we can naturally arise. But like so many things, it's not that we can make it happen. And so letting it be a gradual process, letting it unfold naturally, or letting it unfold through kind of inclining the mind, the heart. And so sometimes we might not even notice it. We might just go about our practice and this subtle joy might creep in and we're not really sure what's actually happening. I really like a quote from this Zen teacher, Suzuki Roshi. He says, it's not like going out in a shower in which you know when you get wet. In a fog, you not know you're getting wet, but as you keep walking, you get wet little by little. That's a little bit how joy evolves in our practice. We get wet little by little, and then all of a sudden we notice, oh, wait, there's some joy. And so perhaps we can start with this very subtle joy that Bhikkhu Anālayo points to. And then the effect of the joy is that our bodies and our minds settle, they relax, and in these moments we're not struggling as much anymore. And this settling can really give rise to a tranquility, sometimes called calm, which is the next awakening factor, the fifth one. This is really this settling into the present moment with ease and calm and peacefulness, kind of a deep stillness and quietude of mind and heart. It can be an okayness, a simpleness, an appreciation. And especially tranquility is not something we can make happen. It's something that evolves through this process that I've been talking about. And so sometimes, you know, people report that, you know, they feel something weird and they don't know what it is. And then when I investigate a little bit deeper with them, it turns out they're just calm and tranquil. And they never experienced it before. And so it can come as a surprise sometimes, like, oh, this is what calmness is like. Like, our lives are so busy, we're just running around the whole time, that a lot of us have just not experienced calmness or tranquility in a long, long time. And so when we start practicing, then sometimes tranquility might come, calm might come. And so if it happens to you, you know that it's calmness and it's nothing weird. Also here with calmness and tranquility, there's an attachment danger. So we can be on the lookout for that as well. The same as with the joy aspect. Just notice it, just being aware, just notice, okay, this is here now. Now there's attachment. And so one way to keep tranquility away, if you want to know, is to start craving for it, start striving for it, start to want it. So often what happens when we have a taste of tranquility, that all of a sudden now we want more of that, and then people try to get it back, and that doesn't work. We can't get it back. It can only come back when it naturally evolves. So yeah, it's something I've experienced a lot too. Like, I want that calmness back. I want the tranquility back, and really the striving attitude. And no matter how many times a teacher says it to you, you probably will have to experience it for yourself and have to go through it. And then at some point you learn the lesson and like, oh yeah, I'm striving again. It's not helpful. And then there's letting go, not that we can let go, but just through seeing that over and over again, the mind lets go, the heart lets go. I kind of like this image of a rip current, where you know, this is current in the ocean, and you get sucked out, you know, towards the ocean. And if you try to struggle, try to fight back, you're gonna drown if you fight back to rip current. But if you let yourself float out, at some point the rip current kind of eases out into this, that it's not really a rip current anymore, but it's more calm. And then you can move away from the current and swim back to shore. And so same with if we fight, that tranquility isn't there. We're in a rip current. We can't, you know, it's not gonna work if we fight. We're gonna lose that battle. And so just letting that whole circus go, like letting it happen, and then at some point it will calm down, and then you can swim back to shore, back to tranquility. And so these are the awakening factors of energy and joy and tranquility. And feel welcome to experiment with it in your practice, especially generating the energy through curiosity, and then inclining the mind towards joy, and then perhaps letting tranquility arise if it arises, and not strive for it if it doesn't. So that's what I wanted to share for tonight. Thank you for your kind attention.